Scripture reading this morning will be taken from Genesis 7, verses 11 through 16. Genesis 7, 11 through 16. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, and the floodgates of the sky were opened. And the rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. And on that very same day, Noah, Shem, Ham, and Jethro, the sons of Noah and Noah's wife, and the three wives of his sons were with them, entered the ark. They were every beast after its kind, and all the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth after its kind, every bird after its kind, all sorts of birds. And so they went into the ark to Noah, by twos of all flesh, which was the breath of life. And those that entered, male and female of all flesh, entered as God had commanded him, and the Lord closed it behind him. Then the flood came upon the earth for 40 days. The water increased, lifted up the ark, so that it arose above the earth.
If you have your Bibles open, you might want to just keep them open at Genesis chapters 6 and 7. And for the most part, I'll stay right here in this passage this morning as we consider some questions regarding the story of Noah. I want to welcome everyone who's here today. We have a good number present. We do have some visitors. Please, as Bill suggested, please do fill out a visitor's card for us. We want to have a record of your being here, and we'd appreciate it if you do that. But we're glad you're here, and hope you'll want to come back and be with us. You know, the story of Noah, obviously because of its of the results of it, that is the events of the global flood, and how radically they've changed and set the course for the world we know. Peter even speaks of a recreation, so to speak, of the world. It was that destructive and that much an altering event. But the story is one that constantly is discussed. If you do a lot of reading, if you do a lot of internet searching and so forth, you'll see just how debated really every nuance of this story, this event, is. And there's no way in 30 minutes or so this morning that we can cover every question. But I do want to touch upon a couple of basic questions, a couple of ideas within this story. Critics question everything about it, but a lot of attention is devoted to the very size and the ability of the ark to carry all those animals. Bill was reading that passage, and you can see there is much emphasis upon the animals. There was a preservation by God of the land animals, and incidentally, if you were carefully noticing the reading, it is only concerning the land animals, not those in the sea. But there is an emphasis by God to preserve those animals, and so God devotes a lot of attention to it. Well, critics question that. Was the ark big enough? Could it carry all those animals? And in particular, and we will get into this whole question, what about the dinosaurs? For one thing, the accepted timeline of most critics or skeptics or non-believers in the Bible, their accepted timeline is not compatible with the presence of dinosaurs on the ark. We'll talk more about that, but let's just note that they don't even believe that the dinosaurs would have been present. But if they were, they will say, the story is ludicrous because there's no way you could carry the dinosaurs on the ark. We want to talk a little bit about that. And finally, the skeptics The skeptics are, I guess they are, but anyway, the skeptics doubt the capability of Noah and his family to secure all those animals, that is, round them up, and I'll use that language, but secure all those animals and care for them once they did, obviously within the ark during the flood. And we'll touch upon these questions. Not going to answer everything about it. I wish there were time. I love talking about this story and go all afternoon, but we won't do that. We'll spend a half hour or so on it. So let's look at it. First of all, as for the size of the ark, I spent a lot of time last Sunday, so I'm not going to rehash all of that, but just call to mind that one of the things I said was the total available floor space on the ark would have been over 100,000 square feet. You can see how I get that. And that's more floor space, if you've ever been on a regulation basketball court, and I'm sure most of you have at some point in time, you know just how big that is. You know how many people can actually be seated on a basketball court, etc. I mean, graduation ceremonies are held on them and so forth. But about 21 and a half of those. If you're talking about volume, just how much can be carried on the thing. Remember we said that the very volume was over 1.5 million cubic feet. And to try to make a comparison, and it's just hard really when you're talking about something this large to grasp it, that would be about the capacity of over 229 modern railroad 50-foot boxcars. So I put a picture up last week of a very common railroad boxcar, and again reminded us that it's 229 of them. Now, you saw all of that last week, so let's not spend a lot of time on that. Well, let's go back to the animals. First of all, a common misconception and a skeptical question that grows out of it is, how did Noah round up a pair of all the animals on the earth? I mean, think about it. The skeptic will say, God is telling, if you believe this story, God is telling Noah, among the other things you've got to do, what have you got to do? Well, you've got to preach to everybody in the world, because you're the only righteous person, and he's sending you out to preach. That would be a daunting task in 120 years just to preach. I mean, if you were told, go preach to everybody over the face of the whole earth, that would be enough of a job. But in addition to that, he's got to build this massive barge-like ship. This 450-foot-long, etc. ship. That would be a daunting task to accomplish. If you, by yourself, with primitive, although I'm not sure how crude, because remember they had metal works and so forth from chapter 4, but still nonetheless, I'm not convinced they had electricity and all of that. So with primitive tools, hand tools, you've got to build that kind of ship. That would take a long time. So skeptics say, if you start looking at this story, then to add to that, that Noah is going to round up specimens of all the animals of the earth, well, that's just ridiculous. So how did Noah round up a pair of all the animals on the earth? And if you look at Genesis 6, and let's just look at it, read it. In verse 18, when God is giving these instructions, he says, with thee I will establish my covenant, and thou shalt come into the ark, thou and thy sons and thy wife, and thy son's wife is with thee. And of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark. Now you see, this is very much like what's repeated in chapter 7. But two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark. To keep them alive with thee, they shall be male and female, fowls after their kind, creeping thing after its kind. Two of every sort, at the end of verse 20, shall come unto thee to keep them alive. Now, critics say that that's just impossible. I mean, the time in doing all three of those things would be impossible, and I agree. I mean, it just would virtually be impossible, but it would take an incredible amount of time. So the question is, how did Noah round up a pair of all the animals on the earth? I'm not convinced he did. In fact, if you look at the passage very carefully, look at verse 20 again, when it says, you will bring, verse 19, two of every sort into the ark. At the end of verse 20, it says, two of every sort shall come unto you to keep them alive. And then, of course, he goes on to tell them about the food he is to bring. So I'm going to say he didn't. He didn't round up all of the animals. In fact, again, looking at it very carefully, chapter 6 and verse 20, two of every sort shall come unto thee. Now look again at chapter 7. There are a couple of things that stand out in verses 2 through 3, 8 through 9, and 14 through 15. For example, if you're looking at this, when he speaks of clean animals, notice this in verses 2 and 3. Of every clean beast you shall take, not two, in fact, but seven. Three pairs and an extra one. And that extra one, obviously, if you go over to chapter 9, is to sacrifice, because that's the first thing he did, is sacrifice one of all the clean animals. But three pairs of them. So seven animals, male and female, and of beasts that are not clean by two, the male and its female. Of fowls also of the air by sevens, male and female, to keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth. Now drop down to verses 8 and 9. Of clean beasts and of beasts that are not clean, and of fowls and of everything that creeps upon the earth. Notice verse 9 very carefully. It doesn't matter what translation you have. All of them will read something like this. There went in two and two, or two by two, the New King James says. They went into the ark, unto Noah. They went into the ark unto Noah. Now what does that say? They shall come to you, chapter 6, verse 20. They went into the ark unto Noah. Notice again as you drop down to verse 14 and 15. They and every beast after its kind, all the cattle after its kind or their kind, every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth after its kind, every fowl after its kind, every bird of every sort. And they, notice this, they went in unto Noah into the ark. It says, two and two of all flesh, wherein is the breath of life. What you're seeing in these phrases is that Noah didn't go out and round them up, as is sometimes commonly suggested today. No, they came to Noah. So much so that really, this classic picture that, you know, has been looked at as a child's painting and so forth, a lot of children, especially in days gone by, there would be this painting in their room, and it was this idea of all these animals kind of orderly filing into the ark. And this was something that was really laughed at and maligned, that this artist would draw such a thing and picture it like this. Notice no humans are herding them in or anything like that. But that really is the biblical picture. The animals were brought by God to Noah into the ark. So Noah was to secure them inside the ark, arrange them and so forth. But he didn't have to go out and round them up. So one question about that the skeptics raised, what about all this time that would be involved? Well, he built the boat. Okay, he built the ark. How much time was spent preaching? I take it the whole 120 years. But as we suggested last week, that can even to a large degree be combined. I have no doubt that if you had a man in this day and time doing something like this, as we would probably say, out in the middle of nowhere, that over the course of 120 years, that in fame and so forth, this story would grow, everybody would learn about it. This would be the kind of thing that you would prepare to go see. Let's go see the crazy man building the boat. And that many people would come to Noah, and that Noah could be standing up on this thing, hammering away and preaching away at the same time. And no time has to be devoted to going out here and getting all of these animals. In fact, a week before, these animals just start filing in, is what we actually see in the passage. So to answer the first question, how do you have time to round them up? He doesn't have to take the time, is the point. Now let's go further with the story about the animals, and let's talk in particular about what fascinates most people and the big question on most people's minds, and I know it's on our young people's minds because they've asked me about it, so I want to talk about it. So this is for them, but I hope we all get something out of it. As for the dinosaurs, let's start with this point. According to the current prevailing view, and if you turn on a documentary or whatever, you're going to see this and hear this. Most non-avian, that is, dinosaurs that aren't really birds, like flying reptiles or whatever, non-avian type dinosaurs, I should have put type on there, but non-avian dinosaurs disappeared during what is called the Cretaceous Paleogene extinction event. Now that's just a big long term for saying in the Cretaceous period, there was this catastrophic event, and you can see that I put on here. It supposedly took place exactly 65 and a half million years ago. The whole earth, surface of the earth was supposed to be destroyed, including the majority of land animals and vegetation, and it was supposed to be due to one or more catastrophic events, including at least one asteroid impact. Now, let me boil that down in simple terms and tell you what they believe happened. At the very least, right off the coast of Mexico, this giant asteroid is supposed to have hit. Right off the coast of Mexico, under the water, there is this humongous crater. And it appears, for all the world, it appears as though a giant, and when I'm talking about giant asteroid, I don't mean some small thing that came in like a meteor does. This is supposed to be a giant asteroid, and there is a huge crater. It hit, and looking at the science of it, the impact of it, in fact, if you've ever seen the movie Deep Impact, about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, actually would be now, they do an excellent job of depicting what would happen. It hits, and it's about like the world's biggest nuclear bomb hitting the earth. It sucks all the water up, throws it up into space, etc., etc., etc. It causes gigantic tsunamis, winds, just literally burning off the face of the earth. And at least there is that one. The effects of it would be global. But now it is suggested that possibly there are two more. One of them is off the coast of Africa. One of them may be in Siberia. Don't know that they occurred at the same time. But at least the one off Mexico, and that's the one you'll hear. Now, what's supposed to have happened? Is that the dinosaurs had dominated the earth, reigned on the earth, it will sometimes be put, for 135 million years. But suddenly, and all at once, there is this giant crash, of this giant asteroid. And maybe other catastrophic events as well, but it just destroys the face of the earth. And so you get a sudden disappearance, they would say, of all dinosaurs. Now, according to this view, and this is what's important, you know, okay, fine, so what significance does that have for me? Well, according to this popular view, what that means is most land animals, including all those big dinosaurs, you know, the Apatosaurus and the Tyrannosaurus Rex, etc., they're all dead. But what it leaves are only animals that could adapt to that extreme event, especially what it leaves is small burrowing type mammals, if you notice what I put up here. And that's very important. Dinosaurs are reptiles. They're lizards. But it leaves small burrowing type, in other words, rat type mammals that burrow under the ground. And because they're small, they don't have to eat much. And there ain't much left to eat. But because of their size and their habits, you know, their habitat, which is under the earth or burrowing down into the earth, they can survive. And what that means then, it allows for them, once this event passes, and it will, and things start growing again, and they will, it allows for those little burrowing mammals to evolve eventually over the course of the next 65,450,000 years. That is, till 50,000 years ago, when the first Homo sapiens sapiens appeared. That is, modern man just like you and me. So it allowed for them to evolve over this period of time, and of course that follows the extinction of the dinosaurs. Now, what does that have to do with Noah and the Ark? Well, if the dinosaurs were all gone 65 million years before, there were no dinosaurs. And so that is sometimes the argument. There were no dinosaurs to put on the Ark. But that's the argument. And so it's commonly believed that dinosaurs and humans did not coexist. Now, I'm going to take a little bit of time this morning, even though asking the question, were dinosaurs on the ark, might be a small question in this whole biblical story. I mean, God never specifically says, and the dinosaurs, okay? But the question is fascinating to children. It's fascinating to a lot of people to ask the question, did all the dinosaurs die out in some big, you know, extinction event like is described by the, you know, these people? Or were there dinosaurs actually rounded up by Noah perhaps and put on the ark? Now, there are other reasons why a lot of dinosaurs might not have been. I mean, in other words, they could have been hunted to extinction, died out by man covering the face of the earth and all of that, just like, you know, animals disappear today. But the question, did dinosaurs and humans ever coexist, is still a very relative question. When we start talking about the popular view, we get these small burrowing type mammals. So let's go back and start with that. You get mammals like this. This is a very common, Jeholodons. And whether this thing actually ever lived or something like it ever lived, I don't know. But it generally is a mammal-like, rat-like creature that has, in many respects, dinosaur-like skin. Now, you may or may not be able to see that very clearly, but it does. You can read about it. And eventually, that thing evolves into something like this in other species, Gabaconidon. Or, as I like to affectionately call these two, Grandpa and Great-Grandpa. I promise, that's the last time I'm going to do something like that. But no, this is supposed to be the very ancestors of man. And if you follow this and you're interested in it, you will eventually get to a lizard-like creature that becomes the first primate. Little tiny thing, about like the gecko walking around on the hind legs. And eventually that will evolve and all of that and become human beings over 65 million years. But we're still asking that question. Can we show that dinosaurs and humans ever coexisted? Well, I believe evidence demonstrates that whole scenario of the rats becoming the humans never happened. In fact, what God has left us, or what the earth has left us, let's just say it like that, is that dinosaurs did coexist with man. And if what some of these things are showing, and you're going to see why I would say this in a moment, they were very much present with Noah on the ark. So the answer to the question, kids want to know, did I believe that the dinosaurs were on the ark? I sure do. I believe they were there, right along with the elephants and the hippopotamus and so forth and so on. Yes, I think the dinosaurs were there. There is out in Texas, and I would get you to go home and read this. And don't take one site's view of it, because if you read a skeptic site, you're going to see all the reasons why this is not the case. And if you look at other sites, you're going to see all the reasons why in the world this is the case. There is a very interesting riverbed in Glen Rose, Texas. This thing cropped up in the news, what was it, last year or the year before, whenever they had the severe droughts in Texas. Last year, wasn't it, Jules? Severe droughts in Texas, this cropped up again. Water levels go down, these things become, all more of them become visible. What they are, again, go home and read it for yourself, but what they are numerous tracks of dinosaur and man that obviously can be dated or appear to be dated to virtually the same time. Remember, you've got to have them separated by at least 65 million years, according to the popular view. And this riverbed just doesn't show this. Now, a lot of people dispute it, and I'm not going to spend any more time on it. But Biloxi Riverbed, go home and read it. You'll find it fascinating. There are videos on the internet and so forth about it. I find even, that was the first thing that ever drew my attention 35 years ago. But I find even more interesting what is being found all over the world currently. And that's cave art. Or other kinds of art, generally lumped into the category of cave art. And the reason they do that is because they date back to ancient people. All of these things date back to ancient people. In various locales all around the earth. You can find them in North America, Asia, etc., Africa. And what it is various pieces of art that may very well demonstrate a post-global, notice what I'm saying, that after the flood, extinction of these various dinosaurs. These dinosaurs, for example, that the kids are well aware of the names of them, and they're just told in countless stories and teachings and so forth. This dinosaur lived 50 million, or rather, you know, whatever number of million years ago, 100 million years ago, and this dinosaur lived 200 million years ago, and all of that. It's interesting to see what some of this cave art shows. Now, let me give you some brief examples, and I won't dwell on it, but you'll find this interesting, I hope. When you look at that, you're probably like I am the first time I ever saw that picture. And I thought, well, man, I could draw that, you know, about all I'm known for are my stick figures. And you look at that, and you begin to say, that doesn't show you anything until you study it. And what you realize is how ancient, first of all, this picture is, drawn on a cave out in the western United States. And you realize how old it is. Then you realize that it's in a desert environment that literally has been somewhat exposed and sandblasted over hundreds of years. So if you study it closer, and there are those who have, and you follow the exact impression of the thing in the wall, this is what it looks like. Now that's crude in itself, but look at it. That's the outline of the impression that's actually there. Crude, but what does it immediately look like to you? And everyone here, I'm sure, has seen plenty of computer synthesized or generated, rather, drawings of dinosaurs and so forth. We've all seen them as though we have movies of them. And you begin immediately to recognize a figure that has short, stumpy limbs on top, big, stocky legs on the bottom, a long neck, a reptilian-like head, and almost a snake-like head, and that long tail, and you immediately begin to think of, I do, of two things. One is, again, that statement made in Job of that behemoth that moves and that gigantic tail and all of that. But I also think of what we have in fossilized bones of these dinosaur-like creatures. Now, let me show you some others. And this, incidentally, is from the Anasazi, who were Native Americans that died out long before Columbus, and it's carved into the walls of the Grand Canyon. Now, here's another one out there. And you might not be able to see this very well, and you're welcome to take a closer look or go online and look at it yourself. But if you looked at this cave art, you can see how it says man and dino here. There is obviously a very clear drawing of a man. And this figure down in the bottom right, that if you stare at it a little bit and realize, very faint, again, time has done that, but this would be more the outline of it, again, and you see exactly what it looks like. Now, not the creature standing on its hind legs with the short little stumpy, or stump, a little arms and so forth, but this is that big, gigantic, four-footed type creature. Again, the long tail, long neck, etc. This is a petroglyph at Natural Bridges National Monument near Blanding, Utah. And if you look at it, to me at least, the animal bears a striking resemblance to a dinosaur, those stocky legs, that long tail and neck, etc. It's supposed to begin to be drawn by the Anasazi that occupied Utah from 150 BC to 1200 AD. And incidentally, the Anasazi is just a name we've given them. They were gone long before we were here. But that's striking to me. And when I see people drawing pictures like that, if it were one isolated thing, well, maybe it's somebody's fantasy that, you know, they kind of got it right. It's not. There are thousands of these things. Here's another one. This one comes from what is modern-day Turkey, the old Carian civilization. It's at least 1,000 B.C. or older. So it's at least 3,000 years old, maybe older. It represents or looks like, resembles highly what might be called a stegosaurus. Stegosaurus is the one that has those triangular plates on its back and down its tail and so forth. Now again, crude drawing. Actually, this is a carving on a piece of pottery, a pottery shard. But look how much it looks like such an animal. And I find this even more interesting. It's not one isolated carving. But rather, if you go over to Cambodia and you look as late as 800, you'll find there is an ancient Buddhist temple there in Cambodia. And there are hundreds of carvings on this temple of all kinds of animals, monkeys and deer and water buffalo and on and on and on, all kinds of animals you can imagine. And interestingly enough, there is this creature, and hopefully you can see this. And again, look at those plates along the spine of its back. Now, that's interesting to me. Turkey, piece of pottery shard unearthed not too long ago, and here is this stegosaurus-type creature. Go due east, you know, number of miles, ancient Cambodia, and here somebody is drawing a very similar picture. I find that extremely interesting. I'll make some additional observations. What am I saying in all of that? Well, there are thousands of them. Hopefully it piques your interest. You'll go home, you'll look it up yourself, because you will be amazed at all of those carvings and drawings out there. They mean something. Somebody did them, and they're not all a hoax. An isolated incident, you can say anything about it. And they did when they first started discovering them. Now there are thousands of them to deal with, and more being found all the time. So I'll make some additional observations. Even if the dinosaurs coexisted with man, many dispute the ability of the ark to carry them. So a skeptic might look at me and say, okay, even if I allow dinosaurs with man, that doesn't prove this story. Well, no. In fact, he would say it raises a lot of questions. So let's deal with that. The point is, if you make a quick look or take a quick view of dinosaurs, it's going to demonstrate that many were of immense size. And I don't doubt that. I have no problem saying, you know, were there dinosaurs that literally were over 100 feet long? Yeah, I believe that. The bones are there. You see it with your own eyes. Was there once a flying bird, a reptile with a wingspan, you know, that was like literally like a modern aircraft? Yeah. I mean, they've been found. Whole entire things have been found. So, yeah, I agree with that. So how do you put all those large animals on an ark? In fact, let's note this. This is a comparison. You may not be able to see it very well, but this is a comparison of the largest known dinosaur. And I will stress to you that in this comparison chart, the largest dinosaur there is 60 meters or over 180 feet long. That's extrapolated from a vertebrae in its back, one. Okay. The largest known specimen that's ever been found of that particular dinosaur is 20 meters. That's big. It's over 60 feet long. But it is supposed it might have been that long. It doesn't matter to me. I can accept a 200-foot long dinosaur. I believe it's possible. But the point is, they're huge. And if you get to looking at this and you think of the size of these things, and I've just listed about five of them and the estimated sizes and so forth, let's start with that long one at the top. Incidentally, that little tiny figure on the far left, that's a man in comparison. How would you like to live with an animal that big? I've stood in front of an elephant, and it's scary, you know, live with something like that. But let's say that you had two of these Amphicillus fragilimi, let's say you had two of them. And they would be 60 meters long. You could put two of them on the ark, one at one end of the ark, and when you got to its head, put the other one, and you would just about, with two of those, have the entire length of the ark, which is incredible. And a person says, now that's just one species of dinosaur, and you've got all these great, gigantic dinosaurs. Well, that's true. So it asks a question. It presupposes a question. How does Noah get all those giant animals on the ark? If you're going to insist that dinosaurs coexisted with man, and you want to argue from the standpoint that we have evidence, really, that for all the world looks like they coexisted with man, and you believe this story of Noah, then you've got to have Noah putting them on the ark. And I say, that's right. However, nothing is said. Look at it again in here. Nothing is said about putting a 180-foot-long animal on the ark. In fact, God does not once in this whole story, both passages we read, God does not ever say what size or how old. When you take an elephant, it's gigantic. But if you take a baby elephant, it ain't that big. It's not that huge. It's big for a baby, but it's not huge. Animals that are gigantic in size many times begin very, very small. And what you've got is, obviously, a miracle of God bringing the animals to Noah. A person might say, and I've heard this argument made, you can't put babies on the ark. You don't know if they're going to die or not. You don't know if they're going to reach full age or not. Well, God does, you know. So you bring two perfect specimens that are babies on the ark, and you don't have to contend with 40 and 60 meter long animals. So nothing is said anywhere about how big they are or how old they are. Also, God specified, notice this, after its kind. Same word that's used in Genesis 1. The word kind does not mean species. If I look at an animal, if I look at the species of a dog, for example, how many species of dogs are there? Does anybody know? Countless breeds, species of dogs. But how many kinds of dogs are there? One. Modern science will tell you, no matter if you're talking about a Chihuahua or a Mastiff or Great Dane, they all descended, and they can show you genetically exactly how it happened. They all descended from the wolf or a wolf-like creature. So how many dogs went on the ark? Two. Not thousands and thousands and thousands of dogs. Just two. A male and a female, because they were unclean animals. After its kind, not after its species. Therefore, as few as, if you began to look at that, at it like that, as few as 2,000 animals may have been required. And when you start looking at all the animals of the earth, all the different species, but then you begin to say, but what's their genus? Or what's their kind? They're not that many. I mean, there are certain distinct kinds of animals. But when you start saying horse and zebra and donkey and on and on and on, they're all equus. Okay? We understand that. We study that in school. So, and maybe as few as 2,000 animals would have been on the ark. But the ark could have easily held 8 to 10 times that many. So, let's allow for the necessity of more kinds than what we have in modern day. And let's allow for many animals to be extinct. I mean, there are no Tyrannosaurus rexes, quote unquote, running around. We can assume 16 to 20,000 animals on the ark and still have room. Remember, there are only a few very large animals, the dinosaur, the elephant, and again, they don't have to be full adult size. Really, the average animal, take all the biggest and the smallest, even adult specimens of the animal, the average animal is about the size of a sheep. And again, if we're talking about children, young, etc., they'd be much smaller than a sheep. But let's just say the average size is a sheep. And given the average double-deck stock car that we talked about can easily accommodate about 240 sheep, you could have a freight train pulling 84 cars. Now remember the train cars in the beginning? 229. But if you had a train just pulling 84 cars, all the animals, all the kinds of animals of the world would fit in the ark. That's less than 37% of the ark. And you'd have ample space for 20,000 animals. In fact, it'd leave an additional 145 freight cars to carry all the food that you need and the people that's got to get on there, all the provisions, etc. In other words, basically two-thirds of the train for everything besides the animals. So it's not the problem the skeptic says that it is the point. Now we'll answer one question. I'm going to do this very quickly. Did all that water come from 40 days of raining? I heard someone just a couple of weeks back, no, it'd be more than that now, maybe 4 weeks back, on television laughing at Noah's 40 days of rain and the flood. Were there other sources of water? Bill read the passage in Genesis 7 a moment ago. How long did the flood last? Was it 40 days? Somebody said, you know, even if it could rain for 40 days and fill the earth up with water so that everything was covered, you couldn't get rid of that water in 40 days. So would it be long enough for the water covering the highest mountain to recede? Let's answer that question very briefly. I'm not going to go through every point here. You're welcome to take a look at this. I have shown this in here before, but it's been several years. If you go through the chronology, and I get you to go home and do this, it's a great exercise. The Bible never says that the flood lasted 40 days. In fact, this is the chronology, and you can see how I've broken it down. If you'll notice on the left side of the chart, look down to the third box, it's far more than rain. The fountains of the deep were broken up. I suggest this to you. You can think about it on your own. I'm not convinced a giant asteroid ever hit the earth and destroyed the whole surface of the earth. I'm not convinced that what is in and off the coast of Mexico, or for that matter, off the coast of Africa, and etc., are not, in fact, remnants of this rather than asteroids. But you can think about that and leave it to your own conjecture. But the fountains of the deep broke up, and the windows of the heaven opened, and it rained in addition to that. So much water was on the earth that, yes, all the high hills of the earth, the mountains of the earth were covered. But notice as the time passes on the right side, you're seeing far more than 40 days here. In fact, if you add it all together, you look down at the total, at least my calculation, you may disagree with this, but I get 371 days, and no matter how you figure it, it's about a year. So it's not 40 days and 40 nights, it's over a year. And there are all the reasons why. Let's close with this thought. How did all of this happen? What made all of this possible? You can talk about the science of it, you can talk about the dedication of Noah, etc. But the Bible begins and ends with this point. God looked upon the face of the earth. People were only doing and thinking evil continually. God destroyed the world. All of the things that have to be figured out and made possible so God can destroy the world and every living thing on the face of the earth and yet preserve Noah, his family, and all the animals of the earth in detail is worked out by God. How are the animals taken care of? Well, we can suggest hibernation. We can suggest they didn't eat much. We can suggest, as some do, a miracle so that they just didn't even get hungry. We can suggest all those things. And maybe any and all of them are possible. But in the end, the Bible tells us exactly how it was all accomplished. In Genesis 8 and verse 1, God remembered Noah and every living thing. When I look at that statement, here's what I see. If you're here today, talked with someone the other day, and like so many times happens, we understand the truth. We look in here, we may see this for ourselves, we look in the Bible, we see this story, we accept it as fact because we know it is the Word of God. And that's not all that much different from how we look at and view salvation. God saves us, and we know how He saves us and what He does, what He accomplishes, and what He has accomplished. But in the end, it comes down to an emotional response from me or you. What about me? Can I do it? Can I become a Christian? Can I live a Christian life? Can I go to heaven? What about me? And I want you to understand that the Bible is replete with stories like this one. For the Bible will tell us something like this. God remembered. The idea of this word in the original is He took care of and provided for Noah and all that were in the ark. Because they were His, you see. Noah was His chosen individual. His family were His people. The animals were chosen by God and brought into the ark. And when you belong to God, when you become a Christian, you belong to God. And when you belong to God, God remembers you, and He takes care of you. And it doesn't matter if a flood, literally, is raging out there around you, God is going to take care of you. And the Bible emphasizes that. Are you here this morning and not a Christian? Maybe you look at your life and you say, I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I can live that life. I don't know if I'm capable. You don't have to be alone. I dare say Noah had a few thoughts. If he was human, when God told him, all I want you to do, Noah, is build a 450-foot-long boat, preach to everybody in the world, and bring a specimen of every animal on the earth into the ark. That's a lot. You know? And that's enough for any human being to say, I don't know if I can do that. But then God says, I'll be with you, and I'll take care of it. You just do what I tell you to do. We can all do that. Do you need to obey God this morning? Do you believe in Jesus? Will you repent and be baptized for forgiveness of your sins? Have you been baptized? And your life isn't what it needs to be and you're afraid? Will you give your life to the Lord once again. Won't you please come while we stand and sing?